Welcome to the No BS Spiritual Book Club's live streaming interview series, where leading New Thought teachers, speakers, and authors share the intimate stories behind the 10 best spiritual books that inspired them the most on their spiritual journey. From well-known classics to hidden gems you might never have heard of, the No BS Spiritual Book Club saves you time and money by sharing reliable recommendations from those who've walked the path before you. The No BS Spiritual Book Club, the only No BS guide to the best spiritual books to inspire your own journey of self-discovery. Here's your host, founder of the No BS Spiritual Book Club, Sandy Sedgebeer.
Hello and welcome. Joining me today to share the 10 best spiritual books that inspired her the most on her life journey is Nikki Kenwood. Nikki is an international healthcare educator through the Upledger Institute and a cranial, sacral and yoga therapist who specializes in gut health, PTSD, concussion, pediatrics and babies. She's also the author of the book Overcoming Chronic Digestive Conditions, Release the Visceral Layers of Post-Traumatic Gut Disorder. That's something that's affected a lot of people these days. Nikki Kenwood, welcome.
Thank you, Sandy. It's lovely to be here.
So you wrote in your introduction to your 10 best list that books are a deeply important part of your life, whether they are for escape, mind-shifting, tear-jerking, laughter-arousing, or just to help you feel less alone in this world.
Yes.
Since books clearly serve so many purposes in your life, I'm guessing that you might have found it somewhat challenging to select just 10. Is that so?
Absolutely right. I mean, you would have laughed. I had my piles of books around me on my desk when I was picking them. And I kept changing my mind. And in the end, I just had to pick the ones that really seemed to resonate deeply inside me. So eventually I got down to 10. Yeah.
How long do you think the process took you?
I did it over a few days because I would whittle it down to a number near 10. And then I'd go back the next day and think, oh no, but what about that one? I couldn't possibly have, you know, gone on my journey without that book, and then it would all change. So I did it over time, over a week or so, I think.
I know that books have really impacted you, as you said, because your first book you read when you were in your mid-teens, and it seems to me that, you know, women and girls in their mid-teens wouldn't be looking at books like this. It was The Body Has Its Reasons, Anti-Exercise and Self-Awareness. By Therese Berthereit and Carol Bernstein, published in 1976. What is a mid-teen doing looking at a book like this?
Well, yeah, good question. I think my teens were a really difficult time. I felt I was anxious, depressed, isolated inside a family situation that was full of violence and neglect. And so I didn't really know how to connect with people. I think I became quite disembodied at that time. You know, it's a great, as you know, a great protective thing. We don't fully inhabit our body because it's not a very comfortable place to be. Mm-hmm. So I really felt isolated. And looking back, I can see it more clearly than I would have been able to say at the time. But when I found it, I can't remember where I found it. I literally fell over it somewhere. And so maybe some kind person put it there in my path. And I read it and it was like, yes, this is it. This is what I'm going to need to be doing. And it was as simple as that. And I read it.
What is an anti-exercise?
Well, I think because the purpose wasn't to gain flexibility or to build muscle strength, the purpose was to use your body movement in order to access the life and the history that was buried there that may be restricting your happiness, your joy, your peace.
So are you talking about like shiatsu? I think, you know, with certain points, trigger points on the body that release emotions. Is that something
Well,
similar?
I think a lot of body work can do that in different ways. So this book, Thérèse Bertherat, she used things. She got people lying down on their backs. She it would do visualization to talk people into their bodies to become aware. And then she used things like grapefruit and tennis balls, and she got them underneath the, you know, beside the spine or in the hip. And just very gently going through movement sequences to help, I guess, become more aware, become aware of sensations in that place. So using it to allow that person to find some release in that part of the body. And there was certainly no formula, and I don't think there is. You know, I know some people do. I don't subscribe to that. It's not. Grief is always here, and the hips have this, and the knees have that. For me, it's a really individual thing.
You were a dancer. I mean, you were a dance therapist and a professional dancer. Were
Yeah.
you a dancer at the time that you were reading this book?
No, but I had always danced. One thing I'd always done was dance classes and dance. And so at the time of the book, no, but I did aspire to be, even though the adults around me were not supportive of that. They really weren't supportive of anything, but certainly not the idea of dance. But I knew in me that not only were the arts going to be a big part of me going through my own personal process of my experience. Learning how to express myself, but also for dance, helping me get into my body again, having been so dissociated from it. And but that's with the benefit of hindsight. I think at the time I couldn't have explained it like that. But
Yeah,
I
it's
knew.
amazing how books come along when we need them, and sometimes they come in the strangest of ways. You know, time and again we hear on this show how a book just fell at someone's feet. And you know, I am just raving to people about a book that I found amongst my Audible you know list. And I don't recognize this book. I don't recall ordering it. But it was a fantastic book. So, you know, it's just interesting how I think books are living things, you know. They know who to go to.
That's absolutely right. And that book was. I knew deep inside me that that was going to be my path. So Thérèse Bertherat was a dancer and also worked with people's bodies to help them on their journey. And I knew in that moment 100% that I was going to be doing both those things, even though I had no idea how.
Well, let's move on to number two, and we'll learn a little bit more about how you moved into this work when we get to the appropriate book. But for now, we'll look at number two, an evocative and very poignant memoir, Cider with Rosie by Laurie Lee, published in 1959.
I still love that book. I had never read such incredible descriptive writing before I read that book. And I can, even now, I can remember how I felt. I was in the garden of that house, smelling the plants, touching them, the sun, you know, water, everything was incredible. And I just felt immersed. I think I put on your page, I felt my senses were drowned in that book. And I think that was another thing that connects a lot of my early books was by bringing me into awareness of my senses through that writing, that again helped me to connect with my body and to become grounded in my body. And it also showed me a way of writing that I would always follow myself. So I've always written some poetry, some's been published, some hasn't. And whenever I write descriptively.
So I don't know how familiar our American audience is with Cider with Rosie. I mean, it's very well known in England, but I do believe there was a movie made, but just in case people are not aware, it is a memoir, and it is a memoir of Laurie Lee's childhood in a remote Cotswold village, a world that is tangibly real and yet reminiscent of a now distant past. And if anybody knows the Cotswolds, it is a very evocative place. You know, it has thatched roof cottages. It is just so old country England that, you know, he had great material to draw from.
Yes, yes. Yeah, it's a truly wonderful book. And it's funny, I often end up buying a copy to give to friends or just people who come across my path.
Mm.
I must have bought at least a dozen of those books.
So book number three is Knowing in My Bones by Ruth Foster, and it was published in 1976. Yes. And I understand it's about movement and education.
Yes, so she brought together a series of essays about movement and education. And I found this book when I was at Laban doing my Bachelor of Honours, Bachelor of Arts in Dance. So by this time, I had left my difficult background and struck out on my own, and I was in London fulfilling my dream, which was to become a professional dancer. And so I was very, very happy at that time. And this book, this particular essay about this particular dancer, was wonderful. I remember this glorious picture of her standing almost stork-like on one leg, and she was just feeling into every part of her balance and her body. It was part of a dance she'd made. And she talked about it in that way. It wasn't about being still. It was about, again, using all her senses to feel into her body, into that beautiful movement she was creating. And that resonated really deeply with me and informed my work as a dancer and a choreographer afterwards very much. It was never about technical tricks for me or striking an incredible pose or how many pirouettes can I do this morning. It was always about feeling into the body and the stories there and how they can be told through movement. So I loved it, and I remember reading that again over and over again.
So book number four takes us back into the career that you're doing now, and you studied with the renowned John Upledger.
Yeah.
And this book is Your Inner Physician and You, Cranial Sacral Therapy and Somato-Emotional Release by John Upledger, published in 1997. What a wonderful gift he gave to the world.
Oh, incredible. And I was so lucky that he was still working in teaching. So I did my initial training in the UK, but as I advanced through the work, I was able to go to America and study with him and be with him in the Institute in Florida. And since then, I've been teaching there, but in my early studying days. And he was incredible. I mean, he didn't suffer fools, gladly, I can tell you that. You know, he put you right if you were working with him. But some of the things he said to me, I pass on when I'm teaching, and I remember every day in my clinic. I think one of the most precious pieces of guidance he gave me was that to be in the place of not knowing is the most powerful place to be. So getting yourself out the way, no ego. As soon as you think you know what's happening with someone, you're lost, you're not helping them.
And that is you know, a great message for all of us in the rest of life as well.
Yeah.
You know, not knowing is a wonderful place to be, because every possibility is open.
Exactly. And it's where you actually have the most power. And certainly with the craniosacral work that he gave the world, it's about having that safe space, a really listening, grounded, neutral space where you're blended with the person, but always grounded in your own body. So you can see why I was drawn to that already from what I told you before. It was the perfect journey for me. And he was a great teacher.
Yes.
Incredible man.
I think I read one of his books a long time ago and was very impressed. We will talk about cranial sacral therapy, which I think is an incredible modality, after we've gone through your entire list, because I'm sure people will want to know more. But now, book number 5, Legacy of the Heart, The Spiritual Advantages of a Painful Child, Wayne Muller, published in 1993. I can imagine most people think there are no spiritual advantages in a painful childhood, but he found some.
Well, and I think I was thinking just that when I found it. I was going through a period of time, maybe in my late 30s, in my 40s, I'd started studying craniosacral, but I was, still aware of the impact on my adult life and my ability to connect with people and be open with people, how my early experiences had impacted me. So I was in a place where I was struggling to find any advantages, frankly. But I saw this book, again, there it suddenly appeared at the moment where I needed to have a few advantages shown to me. And then it kind of all started to fall in place, because what I realized was that by going on my own journey of embodiment and integrating my experience, I could better facilitate that with other people than if I hadn't gone on that journey and become grounded in my own body, or, before I put my hands on anybody else. I also realized that it gave me lived experience, which, if well integrated, can be a thing to share with the world as a teacher. So there's that mixture of being grounded and neutral, making a safe space, but also being able to be open and vulnerable. And so it showed me that what I had was a really rich resource.
Yes.
And I hadn't realized that. So, I didn't read that book cover to cover, but I would dive in here and there, and it would open at the right page, obviously, and there'd be something there, and I'd think, yes, oh wow. And part of that was knowing that I wasn't the only one who'd felt that, but other people had had some experience which gave them some feelings that was similar to the ones I'd had or have. And that in itself was a very reassuring thing.
Mm. Your sixth book, I love the way you described the first paragraph was both a relief and a slap in the face. And the book is The Road Less Travelled by M. Scott Peck. Published in 1978. And I remember this book made a huge impact on me as well.
Did it? Yeah. I can imagine. Well, and the first paragraph says, life is suffering. Everybody suffers. Get over it. The sooner you accept that, the less suffering you will have. And so it's like, oh, okay. So it was that thing of no longer fighting and trying to not suffer, and realizing that by fully accepting all that experience, or integrating it and working with it, actually you suffer less.
But
the resistance to it, just doesn't work. So that was a fantastic book.
It was a bestseller for good reasons. I mean, this is the book that made his reputation.
Yes.
And I was checking it out, and it was apparently he took the book to Random House, and he was just a little known psychiatrist at the time.
Oh,
and
really?
They turned down his original manuscript, saying the final section was too Christ-y. Thereafter,
really?
He went to Simon and Schuster, and they published the
oh,
work.
Thank heavens for
they
them.
Paid him $7,500, and wow. They printed a modest hardback with a small run of 5,000 copies.
Yeah.
And the book didn't take off for 6 years. But
really?
When it did take off, yes.
Wow, I didn't know that.
Yeah. It, apparently, he started going on the lecture circuit, and that gradually built some momentum. And
yes.
Then I think it was reprinted in paperback in 1980, and it made the bestseller lists in 1984.
Wow, how but interesting.
That, yeah, and at that point, I'm sure that Random House were kicking themselves.
Yes, I bet. But how interesting that it can take time for the message to get out, or people to be ready to hear that message, whatever it is.
You know, this is what I tell writers who come to me for advice or coaching, is that you just never know. I mean, Watership Down had 69 rejections. Look how many rejections Harry Potter had.
Yes, J.K. Rowling.
Yes.
I know.
It happens again and again. And sometimes these books go out, nobody reads them. Then someone stumbles across them and, you know.
Yeah,
so never give up, you know.
Exactly. Yeah. Which is why it's great being here as well, talking to you and just getting the message out.
Yeah. Well, we're going to take a short break now. You're listening to a No BS Spiritual Book Club interview. And sharing the 10 books that had the biggest influence on her life journey is international healthcare educator, cranial sacral and yoga therapist, Nikki Kenwood, who is the author of the book, Overcoming Chronic Digestive Conditions, Release the Visceral Layers of Post-Traumatic Gut Disorder. We'll be back with more from Nikki Kenwood after this break.
OM Times TV.
Maya Angelou once said that there is no greater agony than bearing an untold story inside you. I'm Sandy Sedgbeer, and when I'm not hosting OM Times Media's flagship radio show, What Is Going On, and the No BS Spiritual Book Club, I help people share their untold stories. Books are my life, my joy, and my passion, and there is no greater reward than helping aspiring writers get their books out of their heads and into the hands of those who are waiting to read them. If you feel that you have a book in you, but don't know where to begin, visit sedgbeer.com, click on the Work With Me tab, and find out how my experience helping others tell their stories might be just what you've been looking for. That's sedgbeer.com, sedgbeer.com.
Imagine becoming a super influencer. Reinvent yourself. Invest in your brand, and then manifest your success with a robust, spheric approach. OM Times Media and Broadcasting offers a unique and multifaceted way to become the spiritual and conscious influencer you deserve to be by putting your message across our powerful platform with its proven record of integrity and excellence. Through our produced shows, OM Times offers the opportunity to become a social media TV personality, a radio show host, an OM Times magazine columnist, and a syndicated podcaster, all in one shot. By live streaming your show on OM Times TV and broadcasting it across the extensive OM Times radio and TV networks, you become more than a host. You become an ambassador and a force for positive change. OM Times. Open yourself to the possibilities.
There are 16 million children struggling with hunger in America. That's 1 in 5 daughters, sons, neighbors, and classmates who don't know where their next meal is coming from. Yet billions of pounds of good food go to waste every year. It's time we do something about it. Feeding America is a nationwide network of food banks that helps provide meals to millions of kids and families in need. Visit feedingamerica.org to help them feed even more. Together, we can solve hunger. Together, we're feeding America.
Welcome back. Nikki Kenwood, book number 7, And Still I Rise by Maya Angelou, published in 1978.
And that's quite a recent book, actually, for me. Although I kind of knew about her work, I think I was going through maybe a bit of a dip in how I was feeling about life in general. And when I read her poem, And Still I Rise, I thought, yeah, okay. Again, that somebody else is still rising.
She was amazing.
Yeah, I adore, I've become a huge fan of her poetry. I just love it. I think it speaks to so many people. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, she just somehow nails the situations, the emotions, everything about it.
Yes. Yeah. And again, there's that mixture of strength and vulnerability.
Yeah.
And of course, you know, I'm sure you're really familiar with the work of Brené Brown, who is such an eloquent speaker about vulnerability.
Yes.
And it being really the source of our strength, not something to overcome or, you know, put to one side.
Mm.
It actually is our strength.
Well, it's our humanness, isn't it?
Yeah.
That's where we're the most human, I think.
Yeah. I think that's right. And I discovered that I've taught all over the place, as you know. And I would start off my teaching really pressuring myself to be perfect. You know, the PowerPoint, everything, what I wore, how I answered questions, everything had to be really good. But then I realized, actually, I did much better as a teacher when I became a human being. And if I made a mistake or clicked on the wrong slide or fell over my words or dropped the laser pointer, whatever it was, it didn't actually matter. And people responded to me much better because, she's human. Yes. I can relax. I can be human too in that case. Hooray.
Yeah. 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 Yeah, how often we try to rise above that?
No. Yeah.
So, book number 8, you refer to this as Hope in a Book. Yes. The Brain That Changes Itself by Norman Doidge, published in 2007. And I remember reading this one as well, probably about that time, and being, wow, completely, you know, perceptions shifted.
Yes. Huge, because he was one of the forerunners or one of the first people to write about neuroplasticity. Because, you know, we all tended to think that once we'd grown up, the brain was pretty much set. The synapses, the neurons are all in their place. They're going to fire the same old circuits. And if we get an infection or a tumor or a trauma, that something will happen and that's it, you know, or have a stroke. But actually, it's not the case. And the brain does have a plasticity, and we can influence it, how we use it, how we change it, create new pathways through the forest, really. And I think this is such a beacon of hope, because even the thoughts we think and the feelings we feel and stay with and the environment around us and everything that we experience in our life through all our senses and all our thoughts is going to have an impact on the plasticity of our brain. And then I got even more excited, of course, because I realized that in the gut, the enteric neurons are also neuroplastic. So I thought, well, this is wonderful. You know, whatever's going on, there is, again, like the up-ledger place of not knowing we were talking about, it's like there is infinite possibilities that may unfold.
Yes.
And we can influence them in an almost infinite number of ways.
And isn't it good to know that, you know, patterns and behaviours and habits, etc., you know, they don't have to be, you know, in stone. We can change them. We can create new neural pathways and we can move beyond them.
Absolutely. Yes. And, you know, people who've had strokes are a really clear way of showing this when another part of the brain, yes, with time and patience and focus and the right facilitation, can take on the movement or the function of a part of the body that was left high and dry because their initial part of the brain now is damaged.
Yeah.
So that's really clear. But even the thought, you know, and we can all get into that negative thought pattern. So I know I can, you know, overthinking something or thinking something's going to be a disaster when I have no idea whether it is or not. And all these things are going to influence my brain, the brain in the head and the brain in the gut. Mm. And so it's, I just think it's wonderful. And I always share that with people who come to me in my clinical practice who've maybe had, you know, traumatic brain injuries or all kinds of things and feel a bit hopeless and helpless with it, which is really understandable. But I think even just knowing there is a possibility of things changing and of using the brain in a different way,
yeah,
is so empowering.
Yes, and Doidge, you know, talks about many, many people who's, you know, they were told that they couldn't function at all. I mean,
yeah,
blind people who learn to see, learning disorders cured, IQs raised, aging brains rejuvenated,
yes,
stroke patients learning to speak,
yeah,
and children with cerebral palsy learning to move with more grace. I mean,
yes,
so many things. You know, I remember my brother once telling me a story apropos of this, of a child who, I think he had a few problems, but they weren't major. But for some reason, he had a brain scan and doctors couldn't believe that they could not find a brain.
Wow.
And they couldn't work out how this child was functioning until further, you know, examination showed that his brain was actually kind of not like ours. It was flattened. And it was like a pancake.
Yes.
And somehow his brain still functioned, you know, and gave him the ability to live a near normal life.
Incredible.
Yeah. Astonishing.
Yeah.
We'll talk about the gut brain after as well.
Sure.
Because I think that's really interesting,
yeah,
to hear that that too has, you know, the same... Yeah.
And why wouldn't it? You know, it's full of neurons and glial cells, so why would they be different?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, the extraordinary nature of the human body.
Mm.
So number nine, you call this the ultimate no BS book. So it definitely deserves its place on this show.
Right.
Five survivors, 100 lives, stories about trauma and association by Kesa Klapuri. 2017.
Yes, your guess is as good as mine with that name.
So how did you come across this book and what attracted
you
to it?
So, yeah, good question. And actually, do you know, I think it was through, I know what it was. I was doing research for, because I'm also a theatre director, and I was doing research for a piece of physical theatre which was around the ideas of psychosis. And all the cast and the performers had had lived experience of that, as well as being professional artists. So I was exploring a lot of different books because I wrote some text for it. There was a mix of art forms in it. And I found this book, and I'm a huge fan of reading about people's lived experience as opposed to reading about somebody who's got several degrees in maybe whatever it is, but has never really talked to or experienced it themselves.
Mm.
So this book is extraordinary. If anybody wants to get inside the mind and heart of somebody who's had big mental health challenges, or five in this case, read this book, because it's a beautiful human description of their experience and how they move forward with it. And I think it's one or two of them are also visual artists, so there are beautiful illustrations in this book as well as reading their stories. But it's astonishing. And I guess it also then resonated a lot with me because they all had a huge degree of dissociation, which I had experienced and still can sometimes. And they were journeying to be safe back in their bodies and their minds, much as a lot of my journey has been as well. So it's a truly wonderful book. I mean, I've learned so much from that book. More than a book.
Number 10, Selected Poems by Leonard Cohen, 1956. You just love his work.
Yeah, and so this is going all the way back to those miserable teenage years of mine when life was so difficult and horrible. And of course, he was very much in the world of young people at that time. His songs, the existential angst, and that resonated with me hugely. And the words, you know. He was just, again, he was a bit of a lifesaver in that difficult time, because if I read his words and listened to his music, I realized that I was not the only human being who'd felt some of these things.
Yeah, not alone. Yeah, he spoke to many of us, didn't he? Articulated what few of us could say.
Yes. Yeah, and I didn't understand it enough to be able to say it. I could do was be immersed in this overwhelming experience. So to find somebody who could articulate it was, it's a real lifeline, I think.
Yes, yeah.
Indeed. And I still love them. I mean, I can see his book on my shelf from where I'm sitting now. I still love that book.
Well, that's your 10 best list. Let's talk about you and your work. Explain to those who don't know what cranial sacral therapy is.
Sure. So cranial sacral therapy is a light touch form of body work. It's focused on the head, neck and spine, as the name suggests, cranium down to sacrum. But it's much more than about the bones. It's about everything within that system. So the dural membrane that lines the bones of the skull and the bones of the spine. And inside that dural system, we have the brain and the spinal cord. Then flowing around that, we have the cerebral spinal fluid. So it's a real core system that impacts our musculoskeletal system, all our organs, endocrine, everything. So this is the system we work with, and because it is such a core system, and because of the anatomy of the fluids and membranes, we work with a light touch. Because if we worked with a heavy touch, nothing would happen. You know, the fascia would resist. Dural membrane is fascia, nerve tissue is mostly fascia. It would resist our touch. So it's a gentle form of working with that system. And because it's such a core system, it's a form of therapy that can help a very broad range of people and issues.
When you are working with a client, what are you aware of?
So because our training is a mixture of really understanding the anatomy and physiology very thoroughly under our hands, we know what we've got our hands on. And it's a mixture of that and developing highly skilled palpation touch. So our hands are very neutral and listening to the stuff that we know about. So it's like you take a consultation, then you forget about it immediately, hopefully, and put your hands on where the body, we have ways of finding where the body would like us to be in that moment. And we put our hands on soft, listening, neutral hands, hopefully a very grounded therapist. And our aim is to connect with the body's own biological wisdom, what the body needs from us as an individual that day in that moment. And that's what we work with and apply whatever technique seems to be appropriate.
So tell us about some of the ailments, conditions, situations that you've seen this work with where other things
Sure. So, there's the more obvious ones really, which are headaches, migraines, backache, neck problems, jaw problems, pre and post back surgery, all of those kind of things. And of course, with babies and children, difficult births, feeding and sleeping, issues settling, this kind of thing. But then it goes further because all the neurological stuff is helpful, it's helped. So multiple sclerosis, ME, which is chronic fatigue, long COVID more recently, but also many different traumatic experiences which sow the seeds of tension and unhelpful default settings in the central nervous system, in the autonomic nervous system. And this therapy is a wonderful way of creating a safe space to allow some of those physiological layers of stress to let go. So that person doesn't have to use so much energy trying to function in a physical as well as an emotional way.
I sent my daughter and my daughter-in-law as soon as when they gave birth to my grandchildren,
Amazing.
go straight away.
Yes.
Take your baby straight away and have a session yourself while you're there as well.
Absolutely.
It is it's produced results for me,
Yeah.
that are quite phenomenal.
Yes, and me too. And when you combine it with some of the emotional work, which is often appropriate, for me, it was again, it was life-changing for me, to help me into my body and to release some of that grief and everything I'd experienced and had locked away and didn't know. And it's given me a good living for 25 years, so it must work to some extent to help people, otherwise they wouldn't come back.
No, exactly. So let's talk about the gut and tell me about your book, Overcoming Chronic Digestive Conditions. I know a few people who have chronic,
Yeah.
that the doctors just dismiss as, oh well, it's diverticulitis. Oh well, you've got, something else, and there's nothing we can do.
Yeah, and I can understand why they can't, because a lot of these things have an IBS in the research now is shown to be predated by childhood trauma very often. So, and that's a real ubiquitous term now, isn't it? Irritable bowel syndrome, but no less debilitating and disheartening for all of that. So I think I went on this journey with my gut. My gut has given me problems on and off, mostly on during my lifetime. And I always felt I couldn't quite get to the, I was going to say the bottom of it and realize that was anyway. And yeah, I couldn't work out what the piece of the puzzle was that was missing. Why couldn't I get hold of the emotional stuff in here? Why did I still feel I was either in freeze or fight and flight in my gut? And so many people coming to me in my clinic, I just thought there's got to be more here. So that led me to do a lot of reading and research and developing new protocols and techniques with my craniosacral background, which took me into the gut work and which has helped me personally, but also seems to work for the people I teach it to and the patients that come to me. So I think it's about, again, understanding that we can have very deeply buried emotional history there, combining with that with a really good knowledge of the anatomy and physiology and how the gut can store memories. And again, the gut nervous system can have really unhelpful default settings from an early age. Those things again give people hope. The gut is neuroplastic. And with all of that put together, you can begin to move forwards.
So when you're treating somebody, you're looking at the emotional components. Are you doing cranial sacral as well? Yes. Is there something that people could learn to do for themselves?
Yes, so I am. It's an extension of the craniosacral, really, embracing and bringing in to its fold, if you like, the second brain, the enteric nervous system, but the same grounded, blended, neutral hands working with that, but with that different and new knowledge of that system, that whole beautiful universe that's inside our gut. So, yes, and in the last chapter of my book, there's quite a lot of self-help strategies, because not everybody will be able to come and see me or one of the people I've trained. But I think having the knowledge and the insight, having the hope, and then putting your hands on and doing some of the things I suggest, hopefully people can begin to become more aware of what might be going on there.
And is it a chicken and egg situation? You know, like if you deal with the emotion, the gut condition will change. Or if you deal with the gut condition, you'll have, the emotions will come up and then you'll have a chance to clear them.
I think it can be both, in both directions or simultaneously. So often it's really important to look at nutrition and diet, of course. And I do that in myself. But if you don't look at any of the emotional history or things that are held in the enteric nervous system, then it doesn't matter how many avocados you eat, you are still going to have IBS or whatever it is. So both are important. And if you do help the gut condition, yes, then it may quite naturally throw up some of this emotional stuff. Mm. In fact, that's happened to me recently, interestingly. I had an experience which has led me to take some, with my therapist, nutritional therapist, some biofilm disruptors. The biofilms are communities of bacteria in the intestine. And as they've been disrupted, which is what we wanted to do, to just clear something out, some emotional stuff came up in the form of crazy dreams, took me back, and that cleared as well.
Mm. So, yeah. What about Crohn's disease? Because that is a really hard one to live with.
Yeah.
Can it help?
Sorry, what were you
Crohn's asking? Disease, can cranial sacral, or can your book help with Crohn's disease?
Absolutely. It's such a difficult one to live with. And I have worked with people with Crohn's. And obviously, again, they're going to have to work with their diet. But in my own clinical experience, anyway, the layers of stress and or trauma of some description are usually present. And if you can downregulate the enteric nervous system, if you can work with the fascial layers in the walls of the long tube of our digestive system to release some of the tension and strain patterns, you can really help the gut function as well as it can and be more comfortable. Definitely.
As a storage place for trauma, old memories, traumatic situations. Do you think that the gut gets more than other areas of the body? Why do we choose to store it there?
I have wondered that. I think because I don't really know the answer, if I'm honest, but it does seem to hold some of the more difficult to access experiences in our life. That's what I've experienced myself and the people that come to me. Why? I don't know. We do know that the gut sends many more messages to the brain than the brain to the gut. Mm. We know that it has as many neurons as the spinal cord. We know that it's a huge complex processing center. And it seems to me that it's one of the places where we moment by moment are working out how safe we feel in any situation. on a deep level. And if you think also about the long tube, mouth down to anus, 9 meters in length, in fact, everything inside that tube is the outside world until such time as something's absorbed into us or has an impact and comes in. So that's where we really receive the outside world. It's the outside world coming in. And Michael Gerson in The Second Brain describes it that way as well, as not just me. And so how do we respond to that? And how we respond to that with the layers of the tube depends, of course, on our experiences, whether they're surgical, disease processes, or emotional. How is your tube? Is it guarded? Is it fearful? Is it happy and relaxed? Does it have a strain pattern someplace?
There seems to be, we're certainly hearing more about diseases of the gut. Would you say that this is a bit of an epidemic? And if so, is it because, you know, our world is in such chaos that people are, you know, the emotions are high?
I think there must be some of that. And certainly the young people and teenagers that I see who've been through the COVID experience, etc., I see an awful lot is that you've just expressed. But I also think because we have new research and new insights, we're understanding that, as actually Hippocrates said, however many thousand years ago, all disease begins in the gut. And we've found the Lewy bodies that we find in Parkinson's disease in the gut before they appear in the brain, for example. So our understanding has expanded massively to realize that a lot of disease in the body begins in the gut. And we didn't know that before. So I think some of both, probably.
Nikki, we're out of time now. Thank you so much for adding your 10 best list to the No BS Spiritual Book Club's library of recommendations.
You're so welcome. It's been an absolute joy talking to you, Sandy.
You too, Nikki. Thank you. Nikki Kenwood's 10 Best List can be found at the No BS Spiritual Book Club.com, and you can learn more about her work and her book, Overcoming Chronic Digestive Conditions, Release the Visceral Layers of Post-Traumatic Gut Disorder, at her website, NikkiKenwood.com, and that's Nikki with two K's. This show is also available as a free downloadable podcast at Own Times, Spotify, iTunes, Amazon, Audible, and all the major podcast platforms. So if you prefer listening to viewing, go and download it and you can listen to it on the go. That's it for this week. I'm Sandy Sedgbeer, and I'll be back at the same time next week with another 10 Best interview for the No BS Spiritual Book Club. Till then, it's goodbye from me, and thank you again to Nikki Kenwood.
Thank you. Bye.